Radio Prague News.
Members of the Czech government have welcomed news of the death of Osama bin Laden. The mayor of Prague was sent a letter containing TNT last month, the weekly Euro reports, and the first round of newly implemented leaving exams has begun in secondary schools around the country. Members of the Czech government have roundly welcomed news of the death of Osama bin Laden, killed by U.S. special forces Sunday evening. Prime Minister Petr Nečas called the death of the al-Qaeda leader an important milestone in the fight against terrorism and the struggle for a safer world. The death, he said, was a signal to those who lack respect for the law and human life that they will not go unpunished. Minister of Foreign Affairs Carl Schwarzenberg sent his congratulations to the United States and noted that while the primary villain had been defeated, the struggle against terrorism would continue for decades. Defense Minister Alexander Vondra said bin Laden's killing was an important act that showed that justice is inevitable, no matter how slow in coming. Prague Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda was sent an envelope containing TNT last month, the weekly Euro writes. The envelope is also reported to have contained photographs of the mayor's wife and child, who someone had followed for a day. Police confirmed the report, though declined to give further information. Mr. Svoboda has been the target of anonymous attacks since last December, when he received text messages threatening his child and the tires of his wife's car were slashed. The first round of newly implemented leaving exams has begun in secondary schools around the country. On Monday, 62 schools began oral exams. Written exams will be held from May 30th. The new exams include Czech and a second subject, either mathematics or foreign language. Students must then take other tests in common subjects. The system of secondary school leaving exams has been in preparation for 14 years and has been the topic of much disagreement. Mock exams held last October resulted in exceptionally high fail rates. About a third of the 80,000 species of plants and animals in the Czech Republic are at risk of eventual extinction, the Environment Ministry reports. According to a conservation status inventory compiled by the ministry, only one-fifth of the species monitored have a status of least concern. Among the hundreds of species that have already disappeared are 627 invertebrates, 22 vertebrates, 118 higher plants, and 84 types of mushroom. Already endangered species have suffered particular decline, with the number of critically endangered plants and animals doubling between 1979 and the year 2000 to roughly 500. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be mostly cloudy, with a chance of showers and daytime highs of around 18 degrees Celsius. My name is Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's show, Austria and Germany have now fully opened their labour markets to Czechs, but are Czechs interested in taking advantage of the opportunity? This being Monday, we'll bring you a roundup of the sports news and then visit a newly opened Asian fusion restaurant that's turning out to be a big success. And of course, we'll end as usual with a Czech lesson. All that coming your way, so please do stay with us. If you'd stopped a Czech citizen on the street 20 years ago and told him he was free to live and work in Austria or Germany, he would have looked at you in amazement. But on April 1st, that's exactly what happened. The two countries lifted their final restrictions on Czech workers. And what's truly amazing is that it's happened with an almost total absence of fanfare or even coverage in the media. Equally amazing, perhaps, is that hardly any Czechs will take advantage of it. Rob Cameron has the story.
It's a busy spring afternoon here on Prague's Wenceslas Square, the capital's main commercial thoroughfare. This is a city displaying all the outward signs of wealth: Western shops, luxury cars, flashy clothes, and a general sense of well-being. A few minutes' walk away from the square is a rather austere building belonging to the Czech Academy of Sciences, I've come here for a chat with Daniel Munich, an academic and researcher who knows pretty much everything there is to know about labour mobility. What I want to ask him is why other former communist nations, such as Poles or Lithuanians, migrate for work, while Czechs, in general, don't.
The Czech Republic has really higher standard of living. Real wages, purchasing power is greater than in Poland for many people. So the difference, the temptation to go to Germany and get the wages is not so big as in Poland. Also, I think we have better welfare scheme here, and it's another factor which is making the difference compared to Poles.
Daniel Munich explains to me the simple economic and social factors that would make starting a new life in Germany or Austria such an unattractive prospect for most Czechs. Yes, wages might be higher across the border, but so are prices. The Czech crown is enjoying a long period of relative strength against the euro, making imported consumer goods or foreign holidays cheaper. Czechs are not great linguists. Few speak fluent German. For families, meanwhile, moving abroad for work entails a host of expensive logistical challenges, such as paying for childcare, something that's provided for free back home by willing grandparents. These and other pull factors, say Daniel Munich, work against Czech migration. On the other side of Wenceslas Square, next door to the Lucerna Palace, are the sparkling offices of the Czech-German Chamber of Commerce, which has been around since the Czech Republic became independent in 1993. With 600 members, the Chamber's primary role is to help German firms that want to invest in the Czech Republic. But the Chamber also advises German enterprises looking to hire Czech staff. Spokesman Hannes Lachmann tells me there is an appetite for qualified workers. The booming German economy desperately needs 400,000 of them, but he tells me a rather startling fact that goes some way to explain why there will be no rush of Czechs for the German border. Those who want to work in Germany are already there.
I think there's a big misconception, especially if we're talking about high potentials and highly qualified people. Those have already been able to work in Germany since 2009. There were no restrictions for university graduates from the Czech Republic to work in Germany in this highly qualified segment whatsoever. So there's basically no change to be expected. Other reason is it is not so attractive anymore for Czech people to work in Germany.
So there will be no great Czech migration, and indeed it was ever thus. Jiří Peher, political advisor to former President Václav Havel.
I think that this has been a tradition in the Czech lands. Historically, one could see many more Slovaks or Poles actually moving to find work, whereas the Czechs really emigrated mainly for political reasons or because they were dissatisfied with the regime, not so much in search of work.
Finally, a simple statistic that speaks volumes about Czech labour mobility and its potential in Germany. As we've heard, Czech university graduates have been free to live and work in Germany since 2009. Only around 14,000 out of a Czech graduate population of over 1 million have chosen to do so. Those without university education are unlikely to follow suit.
Our thanks to Rob Cameron for that report. And now, this being Monday, we're offering you a roundup of the sports news, for which I'm joined by Jan Fellinger.
We begin first with hockey, and the Czech national team won its opening game against Latvia in Group D in the Ice Hockey World Championships in Slovakia on Saturday, a successful first step in the defense of the gold title from last year. The match provided plenty of action and suspense, with the Czechs out shooting Latvia, but twice falling behind 1-0 and 2-1. The Czech team captain Rolinek scored the national squad's first goal, and Eliáš scored in the 33rd minute to tie the game. The go-ahead goal was then notched by Havlat, and Červenka added a fourth on a breakaway with less than 2 minutes remaining. On Monday, the Czechs faced Denmark, and ahead of the match, here's what defenseman Zbigniew Michalik had to say.
They have a good team, and you know, it's going to be a tough game. So you just have to play our game, you know, stick with our game plan, and you know, put some pressure on them in the first period, and hopefully get some goals early, and it's going to be easier for us. I know they have lots of good young players, you know, they can skate really fast, so you know, we have to respect them and you know, play our game.
And that match takes place after the recording of this program. In related news, Czech defenseman Radek Martinek checked out of hospital in Bratislava on Sunday, only a day after suffering a chilling injury in the opening period of that game between the Czech Republic and Latvia. The defenseman was hit from behind in the head and neck area by Latvian player Kulda, losing consciousness and having to be stabilized on the ice and taken to hospital. The hit left him with a concussion and damage to his neck ligaments. He himself described the hit as being run over by a steamroller. And the Czech team doctor said the player had been very lucky in the accident, suggesting the injury could easily have been life-threatening. No penalty was called on the play, but a review after the match saw the Latvian player issued a 3-game ban. Meanwhile, Martinek is out of the championship and will be out of action for at least the next 6 weeks. Turning to football, in the top Czech football league, leaders Plzeň have somewhat lost their earlier edge after dominating a good part of the season. On Saturday, they only managed a 1-1 draw against Brno, their third draw out of their last 4 games. In the game, they missed an opportunity to go 2-up when Rezek failed to convert on a penalty. Plzeň's unexpected stumbles have allowed second-place Sparta to inch within 5 points, and they'll pull themselves to within just 2 if they can win against Teplice later on Monday. The situation is not dissimilar in the English Premier League, where Manchester United are now only 3 points ahead of Chelsea and Czech goalkeeper Petr Cech. Manchester were beaten 1-0 by third-place Arsenal at the weekend, home to Czech national squad captain Tomáš Rosický, and will face Chelsea at Old Trafford next Saturday. It will obviously be a huge game for both teams, although Chelsea remain the outsiders. Most recently, Chelsea were dispatched by Man U in the Champions League, and now they'll be looking for payback. That's all the sport for today.
A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Time now for our in-depth interview of the week. And in this week's one-on-one, Sarah Borůvka talks to the owner of a newly opened Asian fusion restaurant in Prague.
Paul Day was born and raised in Stafford in the UK's West Midlands, where he started working as a butcher, his first food industry job. After working in 2 Michelin-starred restaurants in London, the chef came to Prague and has recently opened a restaurant of his own, Sancho. In its first weeks of being open, the Asian fusion restaurant quickly became the one place everyone was talking about, and now Sancho is fully booked most days, even at lunch. I met the chef at the restaurant, where he told me about the flavors that fascinate him, how Prague's dining scene differs from London's, and what first sparked his interest in food and cooking.
At the age of 13, I started to work in a local butcher shop while I was still at school, and that really pushed me into the food industry. But early childhood food memories for me are some strange things, actually. I always remember mashed potatoes with tomato ketchup and the hot and cold, and I was always interested in hot and cold things in my mouth.
And then you mentioned the butcher shop, so when did you actually start cooking professionally?
I was in the butcher shop and I stayed there after school as well, and then at age 18 and a half I owned my own butcher shop, which I sold to move to London to become a chef. And I ended up working in Chinatown for nearly 3 years as a Chinese butcher in a big supermarket. I think I'm still the only English guy to have held that position. But they taught me, I speak some Cantonese, and they taught me how to use a wok and how to roast a duck. And I amassed a massive knowledge of Southeast Asian ingredients. I also worked in a few restaurants while I was there. There was a chef that was opening a big restaurant in Waldorf Street, a Pacific Rim restaurant. He promoted me over the next 3 months, and then in the first 6 months I was sous chef there, and in control of the wok section. I really loved that. It was great.
And then I guess maybe the restaurant that a lot of people will know where you worked as a senior sous chef is Nobu, which has a Michelin star, which has been called by The Observer, for example, the world's sexiest restaurant. So cooking at this level surely must be very high pressure, a very high pressure job. Can you tell me a bit about your experience working there?
Up until opening Sancho, it was the best time I had career-wise. It was amazing. We had so much fun, and we were cooking at a very high level to a lot of people, you know, sometimes like 450 people in the evening and a couple of hundred for lunch. We had about 20 chefs on every service. You know, I said to all of them, and people ask about the pressures of cooking and how it is in the kitchen, you know, it's pretty... The easiest way to explain it is to say 14 hours a day is no time at all. You know, it goes very quickly. But all of a sudden, 2 minutes can be a very long time. And that's, you know, that's how it is. But chefs are born to be chefs and do this. And I love it. It's a big adrenaline rush. We were on such a high all of the time. And we had to come up with something new every single day, and we weren't allowed to repeat ourselves. So I had, for the first time in my cooking career, so much creative freedom. I think back on it really fondly. I had a really wonderful time there.
So after spending such a great time there, what then brought you to Prague?
I went, after Nobu, I went and took a job with David Thompson at NAM, and I worked with him for some time. Where we gained one star Michelin. I think it's the only Thai restaurant in the world to have one star. He's a real master. The reason why I came to Prague, I came here to be an executive chef in Prague's first members club, but unfortunately it didn't work out. But anyway, it brought me to Prague, and here I am sitting in my own restaurant, and I feel pretty happy, a little bit tired, but pretty happy. And I really, really like to be in Prague. It's great. I'm very interested by the changing Czech palate. I'm in business with a biopharma in Jihlava, so I'm helping to reinstate the lost art of butchery in the Czech Republic. Unfortunately, during communism, it was completely wiped out. So I'm really happy to be here. I love the city. My parents come over very often. They're still in the UK, and they like it here as well, so... That's good.
What would you say are some of the differences between the restaurant scene in Prague and the one in London?
The main difference is there's so many tourists, what I call tourist restaurants here, and not enough honest restaurants. That's the difference.
And also what would interest me, and you mentioned this a bit, is how you source your ingredients, and if you find it more difficult to find your ingredients here than in London, say, or in the UK.
I've gone out of my way to use as much Czech produce as possible. I'm horrified by the amount of restaurants in the Czech Republic that advertise Uruguayan or Brazilian beef steaks when it does actually exist here. You know, it's a bit harder for the chefs to get it. It's much easier to have Uruguayan and Argentinian. So all of the protein that we're using is coming from the Czech Republic at the moment, apart from the chickens, but we've got two guys that are going to start growing or farming chickens for us in the spring. They're just starting next week. And then I'm pretty fortunate because the Czech Republic has such a huge Vietnamese population here. So there's an aeroplane that comes twice a week from Hanoi City. It's not very good for Sancho's carbon footprint, but we have like fresh lemongrass, herbs, fish sauce, everything I need, basically. So I got one of my guests to pop by. He was in London last week. He popped by Chinatown for me and picked up 3 tins of preserved black beans with ginger. So if people do that, then, you know, it makes it easier for me.
You mentioned all the places you worked, and also that you worked in Chinatown, and it's very obvious just looking over your menu that you are inspired by Asian cuisine. Could you maybe describe what you like about the flavors and how the cooking techniques differ from European ones, maybe for a layman who never used a wok before?
It's not just wok cooking. Well, the thing that I've always been fascinated by is just the flavors. The flavors and the textures. And how it all goes together. The balancing of Thai food is fantastic. There was a big boom when I was growing up about French food, and I never really got into that. In the UK, we have a lot of Chinese takeaways and Thai restaurants, and that was always my favourite food. And when I had my butcher's shop, I was always cooking at home for friends, and I used to cook occasionally in the local pub. I used to make curries. So I've always been interested in this form of cuisine. The cooking techniques that we use are fun, exciting. You know, we do a lot of steaming, braising, marinating, brining. Some of the beef rendang curry I have on at the moment, we cook for about 14 hours, but it's in the fridge for 5 days. It has 21 different ingredients, and it gets cooked two different ways. The pork belly that I have on at the moment with the black vinegar and three peppers gets cooked 5 different ways over a 3-day process. It's, you know, this is real serious cooking, and it's fun.
Would you say that receiving favorable reviews on food blogs now more than ever is a very important factor in getting people in the door?
It's a very, very important factor. You know, we've also had some really good reviews in the national press here. It is a factor. There's a lot of people. I'm amazed at the amount of bloggers that come in and just take pictures of everything. And I sometimes I wish I'd just have a bit more fun with the food. You know, it's because it all seems to be taken a bit too seriously. But they're writing very good things about us, so it must be a good thing.
And also another thing that you mentioned earlier was the changing Czech palate. Could you elaborate on that a bit for me?
What we do at Sancho, and what I'm teaching all of the staff, is we guide our guests towards enjoyment. And our Czech customers, which we have a lot of, are very easily guided. We don't make the food intimidating at all. And my Czech clientele are really, really happy with the food, and it makes me so happy. It's great. Everyone is really enjoying it, and you know, I think the local Czech people are quite happy that Sancho's here.
Chef Paul Day was Sarah Borufka's guest on One on One, and now in the time left to us, we're offering you a look at the intricacies of the Czech language. Due to its enormous popularity, Radio Prague is currently rerunning its Soundcheck series. This part is with Jan Fellinger.
Welcome to another edition of Soundcheck, Radio Prague's language series, where you can learn Czech phrases through song lyrics. In today's episode, Slibovat hore dole, an expression singer Dania Landa uses in the song Verbíte, Recruiters. The phrase means to promise a lot. Indeed, more than one can deliver. In English, the saying or the equivalent is to promise the world, or the moon, or the earth. Slibovat hore dole translated literally means to promise mountains, hore, and valleys, dole, and maybe even everything in them. Basically, a big promise. For example, in an election year, it is typical for Czech politicians to slibovat hore dole, whatever it takes to get elected, the more cynical might say. A suitor trying to earn a girl's heart might too promise more than he can fulfill. The moon, the earth. But promising mountains and valleys and keeping your promise can prove no simple task, a veritable Grand Canyon or Mount Everest. That's one reason why the Czechs also say Slibisohibe, promises are mistakes.
Promise nothing, and you have nothing to fear. But make a promise you can't keep, well, you'll soon find yourself in trouble. Read my lips, no new taxes. Remember those famous words? Well, by comparison, here in the Czech Republic, politicians by turns have promised for years to introduce direct presidential elections. We still haven't gotten them. Sliby jsou chyby. Promises are mistakes. Incidentally, the song Verbíři, Recruiters, is about being recruited into what sounds like an 18th century army. The wine flows, girls sit nearby, and the Verbíři promise young recruits mountains and valleys, hory dole, and everything in between. Only in this case, well, most cases, it's nothing but a trick. Young men dream of honor and glory, but all they really find in service is fear in battle, face down in the dirt. So much for mountains, so much for valleys.
That edition of Soundcheck was with Jan Wellinger. If you'd like to go over it again slowly, check it out on our webpage. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. This is Danielle Lazarová saying thanks for listening and join us again soon.